Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
And thank you for listening tonight. I'm your host, Jennifer Hellman, intuitive life coach and writer. Tonight's special guest is a man of many talents. He is an author, a researcher, a formulator, an educator, and a mentor. Tonight we're going to be discussing many things from his book, Diagnostic Face Reading and Holistic You. Roger Benzanis has become an alternative health best-selling writer, and I am honored to have him on the air. I actually found him by mysterious ways by his MySpace. He was my friend on MySpace, and I have no idea when, where, or how it happened, so it's like this cosmic connection with him. So, Roger, thank you, and welcome to air.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Jen. In fact, anybody who wants to hunt me up on MySpace, all they have to do is spell my name right, and they can be my friend. So, yeah, dive right in.
And why don't you do that now? Since
you
mentioned MySpace, we might as well get it out there.
Sure, why not? Everyone, write it down. The first name is Roger, R-O-G-E-R. The last name is Benzanis, which doesn't help you spelling it, so here's the spelling. It's B like boy, E like Edward or egg, Z like zebra, A like arm or Alan. After the A comes an N like Nancy, I like Iris, S like Sam, Benzanis. You can find me any old time and just punch me up and you'll be amazed at what's there.
Oh, there's a lot of wonderful information. You have a wonderful blog with tons of information that you put out there.
Thank you.
I just read one of your blogs and immediately wrote you saying, would you like to be on my show? You got some great information.
Thank you. I remember that. Yeah. My blogs are aimed at healing, and especially at women, because, women just aren't given enough of the proper attention. They're given all kinds of attention, but not the proper kinds of attention when you consider the importance of women on the planet. We just tend to ignore what we're doing with the planet and how the future is going to be pushed ahead through women. What we do to women, we do to the future of mankind.
Do you think, you know, in the distant past, women really were the rulers and the movers and the shakers in society? Do you think that is going to be more prominent again?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to say, but I mean, you look at the way politics is moving along, and I just don't know, but it appears that something very grand is happening. And like I said earlier, that if we don't do something to protect and heal and nurture women, then mankind will just be a footnote in Earth's history.
Right.
It really will.
So let's talk about this. In what way do women need to be nurtured or treated better than they are now?
Well, look at what we're doing to women. In other words, if you were to make a list, and believe me, I did, of the differences between men and women, you'd have a list that would be about 45, 50 items long. And in a good majority of what we market to women, what we sell to women, same thing, is toxic or poisonous.
Mm-hmm.
For example, makeup.
Mm-hmm.
Makeup is something men don't wear a lot of, but women slap it on or put it on or told they have to put it on to be beautiful. And depending on the ingredients, makeup is harmful or can be. Eyeliner is another one. There's a variation of makeup. How about makeup remover? We don't think about that. But here's a chemical that you wouldn't want on your body very long, but a woman is putting it on her skin every day or can be. How about hair coloring? Hair dye is toxic. I mean, how many men have been in the room when their wife came home or girlfriend came home and said, like, honey, what was that? Oh, my God. And the poor woman has been running around all day with this on. And we can go on from mascara, lip liner. How about ear piercings? Now, this is fascinating. Fascinating, Jen. I was doing a presentation about 5 years ago, and I was just on stage thinking out loud, as I do, because I do think on my feet. And I said, you know, it's interesting. Numerous modalities accept that the earlobe is the focal point as far as one of the meridian points for the heart. In other words, earlobes represent the heart in different modalities, so therefore you want to keep them free of any encumbrances, if you will.
Right.
So I said, this is interesting. It's clear that we can use a little pinprick with an acupuncture needle to create a healing. But what if you just punctured it all the way through and then hung stuff from it? Could it be harmful? And a number of acupuncturists raised their hands in the audience and said, well, sure. I said, well, that's interesting. Therefore, one could conclude based on that that heart disease among women might be very high. And it was as if I was staring at a number of deer looking into the oncoming headlights of a car. They were just staring at me like, what are you, nuts? Do you have three heads? Who are you? I didn't realize at the time that heart disease is the number one killer of women on the planet. So I then said, well, that's interesting. So after I got that all straightened out, I said, well, if that's true, that heart disease is killing women, we know that it is, and there might be a connection between heart disease and women caused by ear piercing, because more women have their ears pierced than men. Mm-hmm. Practically all women have their ears pierced. Practically all. I said, well, would it also stand to reason or hold up under scrutiny that ear piercing and heart disease among men would follow the same exact curve? And that's exactly what I received numerous emails after the convention showing those exact numbers. That is, ear piercing among men was on the rise in the early 80s,
right.
I was saying late 80s, and then declined a little bit in the mid or early 90s, actually, and climbed back up. The numbers among heart disease among men in that same time period, in the same age group, was showing a marked rise.
That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
What about other body piercings? So like the belly button or the nose, the eye?
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. So the book is called Diagnostic Face Reading and the Holistic You, which can be gotten in a number of different places, and we'll talk about that later.
Yes.
But in the book, I spend a lot of time on body piercing and ear piercings. For example, you're now going to learn a little bit about face reading. So your eyebrows are right in the bladder meridian. So when you see an eyebrow piercing, you can pretty much guess that woman, because usually it's about 70% women, 30% men who have eyebrow piercings, they're going to have trouble with their bladder. Just ask. They say, yeah, that's funny. I have been getting more bladder issues and bladder infections. Here's a great one. I met a woman at a convention about a year ago. And I couldn't figure out why she was constipated, and she wanted to get some of my products, and I wouldn't give them to her. I just wouldn't, because everything had failed her. Nothing had worked. So I wasn't going to be another failure. I wanted to get to the bottom of it, because there's something causing it. And I noticed she had I noticed she had a tongue piercing. I said, when did you get that? And she said, it was October 2 years ago. And how long have you been constipated? Oh, for about 2 years. Really, when do you remember that you really became constipated? Ooh, seems like early November that same year. Really? Oh, yeah, I know that because my mom wasn't going to let me go out for trick-or-treat because I was only 16 when I got my tongue pierced, so she said I couldn't go out. She was furious with me, so I know it was right then. And then by the 1st of November, I was constipated, and that means less than one elimination per meal eaten. She wasn't going but once every 5 or 6 days. She was bad.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was painful. It was horrible. And if she wasn't taking something, she wouldn't go but once every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks. It was scary bad. I convinced her to take the tongue piercing out because it was piercing the meridian point for the stomach. Well, I did convince her to take it out. And 2 weeks later, she calls me up thanking me. She was off all the laxatives she was using. She had no problem going. And here's how important the tongue is to the body. If you pierce the tongue, it will heal in under 24 hours once you remove the piercing. Now, you can't say that about your ears.
No.
You might not be able to say that about the eyebrow. I haven't checked. But I can tell you most piercings will not heal that fast. But on the tongue and other places in the body, it will. That's remarkable. That's how damaging piercings can be. So belly button piercings, I haven't gotten into totally. I can't honestly tell you what meridian it's crossing, but you can guarantee.
It's definitely getting something.
You bet. So, here's another scary thing. Okay, so we know that tattooing is huge. I mean, if you don't have a tattoo, you're nobody. Well, ever wonder why tattoos fade?
Because they're sinking into the skin.
That's right. And the organ that regulates the skin is the liver. Now, it's common knowledge that that tattooing causes hepatitis. Well, that's actually not true. Tattooing is not causing hepatitis. Hepatitis is the swelling of the liver. It's not the tattooing action. It's not that. It's the ink. And it's not what's in the ink. It's not the hepatitis that was being passed in the ink to the person. That's not where you get it. It's toxic to the body. All those metals are toxic to the body. They immediately attack the skin, which immediately is directed to the liver. The liver regulates that. That's why when someone has poison ivy or poison oak, the liver is completely swollen. Same thing. So the liver is slowly dredging the ink out of the body, and over time, the tattoo fades. So when you meet someone who was in Vietnam or maybe even Korean War and the few survivors that are living soldiers from World War II who have tattoos, they're practically gone now.
Right.
And so the body is trying to desperately remove that ink. No different than if you got ballpoint pen ink on your hand. You can't get it off fast enough, and then you ignore it, and an hour later it's gone. Well, tattoo ink is a little stronger, a lot stronger, and a lot more dangerous, but the same mechanism takes place. Liver absorbs and tries to get rid of.
So that's why it's so important to detox the liver pretty regularly, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. If you're not thinking in terms of detoxing the body, in other words, doing a good colon cleanse, supporting the liver, turning on the liver, turning on the kidneys, turning on the lungs, and getting them to function, then we're getting more and more and more toxic. And it's funny, here we go, full circle. We just came back to what we're doing to women again. Nail polish, acrylic nails, birth control pills, contraceptive gels. Here's something that no woman really thinks about. But do we really need tampons that are scented?
No.
No, no. I mean, if we just had something absorbent, okay, pads are far better, but that canal has a few uses. But having something there that's full of perfume and dyes and whatever else, that isn't one of the things that should be there. Oh, my gosh, what we do to women just is insane. And how about this? The year before, we did over 660,000 hysterectomies in this country. Now, why are we doing that? Because some doctor or doctors have to pay for their houses, pay for their cars, pay for the kids' braces, pay for their private plane if they have one, golf, whatever. They've got to pay for their lifestyle. And it's a wonderful thing to sell. But were women dying 400 years ago at age 40? No.
Yeah. Well, they could have, but it was more... Well, it depends. 40 years ago, probably not.
No, not 400 years ago either. See, what we've done is we've convinced women and people that we need surgeries, that we need this, we need drugs. In order to be happy, we've got to be taking drugs. Just talk to the pharmaceutical companies that put people on chemicals for ADD and ADHD and depression and anxiety and
yep.
Oopty-doopty disease and whatever else every day. And if you're not on the drug wheel or in the drug kind of drum or the drug economy, then
right.
You're really useless to the AMA, the FDA, and, and our government. And a lot of people don't realize that the FDA, which sanctions drugs every year, is a government agency.
Right.
And they probably don't realize that it costs $800 million for a drug to reach market, and part of it is through, and that's $800 million is paid directly to the FDA to get your drug a patent, which leaves you 7 years to then put your drug on the market and then make all the money back you want. And meanwhile, the FDA is turning a blind eye to any complaints, any irritations, any deaths, until your seven-year period is up, then they might come after you. It's scary what we do in this country.
It really is.
Oh, boy.
It's, I mean, and some of the drugs, it's like I was talking to someone today about Paxil.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the antidepressants.
Sure.
That is, like, really, in my opinion, being overly prescribed. Oh, you're a little blue here. Take this pill.
Oh, sure.
And it's, she has a daughter that was taking it and finally took herself off of it cold turkey because it was making her more suicidal than without the pill.
Exactly. Well, you know, I speak about this a lot. And you see, 4,000 years ago, the Chinese said, and accurately so, that the liver and emotions are linked. In other words, they saw emotions as being, or the intensity of emotions as being a body problem. Now, personality and emotions, those are more spiritual problems, if you will, just like memory would be and thought would be and creativity would be. We could say those are spiritual aspects or the soul, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, anybody who is what's the word if they are not religious or don't believe in God, I'm suddenly blank. It's
that'd be
with an A.
Spiritual.
An atheist.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, they wouldn't agree with this at all. They'd say, when you're dead, you're dead. And that's fine. They can have those beliefs. But in general, the Chinese were looking at the liver and saying, well, this is interesting. Treating the emperor when his diet is poor and his liver being the linchpin of his immune system is overwhelmed, he gets more moody and irritable. And that's not good. And they were very interested in that because their lives and livelihood depended on it. If he was upset, they could be beheaded or kicked out of the court and just be a public individual again. And that's not nearly as fun as being in the emperor's court and taken care of and well-fed and so forth. So when we improve liver function, emotions get under control. In fact, let's just go a little bit further. Think about this for a second. Would you say, and I covered this earlier, but I was kind of asking you, would you say that emotions are a function of the body or the spirit?
Body.
Would you say body, or are you sure of that? Emotions?
Well, you know, emotions, it affects the body.
Uh-huh.
But where
do they come from? Where do they come from? Are they a spiritual thing?
Yeah.
There we go. And then, so would creativity be a body thing?
No.
Or more of a spiritual thing?
Spiritual.
Well, these answers are all going to come up spiritual, right down the road. The question is then, if it's a spiritual issue, and the spirit or soul interfaces with the body and runs the thing, but can't be found in the body, and it's not of the body, but is commingled with it and runs it, then why did psychiatry decide that the brain was the focal point of emotions? And the answer is, they just looked at the brain and said, well, it must be what it is. That's where we think. No,
right.
The brain is actually a computer that opens the eyes and closes the eyes. It makes the heart pump. It makes the arms move. It's just a computer. But the soul isn't attached to the body.
No.
It can go where it wants to go. So therefore, if when we're treating the body and putting someone to sleep, what are we doing? We already know that an overwhelmed liver heats the emotions or make them go out the bottom where we're depressed. So overwhelming amount of chemicals will make the emotions run hot or cold, but extremely so. What did psychiatry do? They said, well, we don't understand anything about souls. Let's just increase the load on the body. They didn't know they were, but actually try to put the brain to sleep, which they've achieved, and that's why they were doing lobotomies. They just want to cut the thing up. They want to put the person to sleep. All the while, they've actually made the person worse by increasing the load on the liver. And there are people going, oh, my gosh, is that what's happening? Right now, listening. And this explains why the revolving door system of, oh, this drug has stopped working. Well, let's try this one for a while. Then Xanax, then Zoloft, then Paxil, then Wellbutrin, then Haldol. All increasing dosages, all making the person worse. When what we wanted to do was detox the system and get rid of the waste and therefore get the moods under control. Very simply. But that's not what medical science wants to do. If you can treat yourself, nah, they're not making any money.
No, that's for sure. And that is the focus of it.
It really is.
The pharmaceutical companies is a huge industry, and, you know, working with the FDA so closely, it's no surprise how much money they really are.
Well, let me give you some numbers. Okay, now I can't name the company, although I'd love to, but I can't, but they're the fifth. No, they're the largest, they're the fifth largest pharmaceutical company and the number one something company. But anyway, fifth largest pharmaceutical company, everyone's going to the web right now looking it up. So the fifth largest pharmaceutical company in the world, their drug, which again I will not name, in 2006, their number one drug, made $7 billion. $7 billion with a B. Billion with a B.
Now, was it an antidepressant?
No. It wasn't. But keep in mind, antidepressants make a lot more money than that. But this fifth largest pharmaceutical company drug made $8 billion. Now, that's significant when you consider that the entire herbal supplement industry in 2006 only made $4.5 billion.
Do you think that's going to increase, though?
Going to what?
Do you think the holistic remedies and the herbal kind of things are going to increase in popularity?
I believe they will.
As more of this kind of information of how it's really hurting you more than it's helping you when you use the regular...
Well, here's the news on that. I believe it will, but all the while the pharmaceutical companies are noticing that their pennies are disappearing, and they don't like that.
No.
So they're trying to stamp out and squash the pharmaceutical companies, the herbal industry right now. In fact, recently there's a commercial on TV for a well-known over-the-counter product, which I won't name, that's now come out with a laxative or an herbal product for the tummy to help someone with constipation. So they're trying to kind of cut into the herbal supplement pie, which isn't that large to begin with, but they want to control it. Now, what are they going to do with it? What they'll do with it is control it, buy it up if they can, and then squash it.
Right.
And that's what big business does. If they see something in their way, they kill it. Competition? No, we don't like no stinking competition. We got to kill the competition. So, they want to see the herbal supplement industry and the alternative health industry completely out of business. In fact, the allopathic medicine doctor absorbed the osteopathic medicine doctor was very similar to a chiropractor in the early 1900s. So osteopaths still exist, but now they only adjust the cranial bones, which they did do more adjustments in the back way back when. Now they only adjust the cranial bones, and their osteopathic medicine training only consists of 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're kicked out on the street. So they have a heavy dose of the usual drugs and surgery. And then they get 2 weeks of osteopathic medicine training, and they're kicked out on the street. But they're an osteopathic medicine doctor. They know enough about cranial adjustments. They can do them. And cranial adjustments are wonderful. But really, they were absorbed into the machine. And it's happened numerous times where chiropractors were attacked, and they tried to absorb chiropractors into the machine.
Right.
So if we're not vigilant and stand up and fight and say no, then not only will the spending stop in alternative health, but it'll actually disappear. So we've got to keep making noise. Your show has to be heard. My book has to be read. I've got to duplicate myself 600 to 700 times. Where there's 600 to 700 more of me, or people like me, who are screaming from the rooftops, no, don't do that. Pick up an herb, plant an herb, do something, eat something in your kitchen. So, in fact, people aren't used to what I'm about to say. They probably aren't used to what I've been saying already, but here's something they just haven't heard. So let's say you have low back pain, muscle pain, joint pain. Routinely, you feel like you have arthritis symptoms. This is a common problem, and it's routinely misdiagnosed and called arthritis.
Right.
Well, the kidneys regulate a majority of what I described there. The liver regulates some of it, too, but the majority of it is regulated by the kidneys. A simple way to turn the kidneys back on is to eat dark grapes. Grapes, period. Some people do well with dark grapes. It's about 85 to 90% of the people do well with very dark grapes, and the rest do well with light grapes. I'm one of the light grape people, but most do well with dark grapes. And what will happen when you eat dark grapes? Well, you may notice that your equilibrium problems, in other words, you had vertigo, you were dizzy,
right,
suddenly start clearing up. Muscle pain, joint pain, finger pain, swelling starts dissipating. Low back pain starts going away. You notice the prostate issues that you've had start clearing up just from eating grapes.
Now, is it the same with grape juice?
No, I'm so glad you asked me that. Grape juice does something completely different, but just as wonderful. Grape juice is excellent for purging the colon and aiding the liver. Now, some people are saying, what, grape juice? It's full of sugar. It's loaded in sugar. And they're right. It is. But if you consume it first thing in the morning, right after you get up, right after you go pee, you go to the kitchen, you weigh yourself, and you go to the kitchen, and you drink anywhere from 8 to 16 ounces of grape juice, you will notice a number of things. One, in the next few hours, maybe right away, within 2 hours or an hour or so, you'll have what most people call the grape juice stool. It'll come rushing out of you. You'll know it's coming. It'll have the odor of grape juice. It may look like grape juice. And there'll be no mistaking it's grape juice. And if it's aiding the liver and pushing waste out, you'll be getting rid of acid. And it may actually be slightly irritating coming out, but that's not bad because your liver is getting rid of acid.
Right.
And then, so it's purging the colon and purging the liver. Now, there's another use, which I just mentioned, but didn't exactly explain. Let's say you have somebody who's very constipated. Well, there you go. Use some grape juice to get yourself started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a major purgative to the colon. It's amazing. So it isn't aiding the kidneys, but it certainly is aiding the liver and the colon. Fun to know? I'm sorry.
I actually have a neighbor that drinks a mixture of grape juice, apple juice, and apple cider vinegar every morning.
Every morning. And is
and
this person healthy?
Her health is improved. Her cholesterol is down.
Mm-hmm.
Her energy is up.
There you go.
And it's just like a third of each mixed together. And, I mean, a lot of people are speaking very highly these days of apple cider vinegar and all the wonderful things. Just taking a teaspoon of that in the morning in water, that alone can help many, many things. Do you agree with that or no?
Oh, absolutely. See, my mother used to give us apple cider vinegar and lemon, and honey, as much as we didn't like it, it was great. Now, the only downside to apple cider vinegar is that it's vinegar. Now, you would do far better with just the whole food. In other words, there's a lot of ways to handle indigestion, a lot of ways. There's one that's an old home remedy is where you drink a thimbleful of vinegar. Now, why would that work? Here's why, and I'll explain the other ways to do it, too. The reason that's so effective is that when someone has acid indigestion, they don't have an overproduction of acid, like the TV tells you. It's not that. We don't want to turn off acid production. Acid production's already been turned off due to composting of all this horribly, badly mixed food that is just sitting there layer upon layer upon layer, like a compost bin in the stomach, fermenting. So the stomach is sitting there going, I don't know what to do. And it doesn't have enough acid to give any response or actually to break this down. So what does it do? It uses its last vestiges to burp it up and give you acid indigestion. Oh, I feel terrible. Oh, it's burning, burp. Oh, ugh. Okay, so that's what the body's doing. It's communicating to you, give me acid. So you do. You give it some acid. with a little, you could do it with lemon too, but you do it with vinegar. Boom, and suddenly your acid indigestion, within 30 seconds, maybe less, is practically gone or improving. Well, there's a far better way to do it, and here's how I discovered this. Now, I'm not the only one who knew this, and people long before me knew this, but here's how I discovered it. One night about 5 years ago, oh, longer than that, before I was a raw foodist, and yes, I eat a raw food diet, I was stumbling into the kitchen one midnight. Oh, I had acid indigestion. Oh, it was killing me. Oh, I was dying. Oh, I did what everybody does when they have acid indigestion. I drank water. It made me worse. It felt terrible. And I'm looking around for any answer. And that day, I bought clementine tangerines. So there they were, sitting over by my herbal cabin where I had all my formulas, which I wasn't going to take because they wouldn't help me either. And there were these clementine tangerines. I said, I'll do anything. I peel a clementine tangerine, take one wedge in my mouth, chew it up, swallow it, instantly gone. I'm like, what? Wow, how cool! Instantly gone. I mean, no delay. Instantly gone. You know what this meant, Jen? This meant I had license under the cover of doing research to abuse myself for the next several days. So you better believe I did. I ate hot dogs and pizza and spaghetti, and oh, midnight, I feel terrible, go to the kitchen, instantly gone. I did this for 4 days. It was routine, instantly gone. I then tell my girlfriend at the time, instantly gone, same thing with her. I then start talking to my doctors. I said, oh, yeah, old home remedy. Oh, yeah, my grandmother taught us that.
Right.
So then I had a large group of people doing it, and across the board, there wasn't one failure. I then tested juice versus pulp. Juice wasn't as good as pulp. It was okay, but the pulp is where the enzymes were, the whole enzymes, and I'm not saying get an enzyme capsule. Some people like to do that. You can do that if you want, but you want the live, whole enzymes in the food, and the pulp would do it. Juice, not so much. So then I tested oranges. They work just fine. Lemons, most people won't eat lemons, but citrus would do it. Any kind of citrus would do it, but especially clementine tangerines. So there you go. If you want to handle your indigestion, and we're just coming in to tangerine season.
Yes, we are.
Oh, boy. Just go to the market. If there's a Trader Joe's nearby, go to the market. I don't care where you go. Go to the market and get yourself the clementine tangerines. And by the way, if you have a Trader Joe's nearby, which I know is around the country now, then they have tangerine juice coming into season that I just called corporate a few days ago. November-ish, which means the end of October, 1st of November, could be any day now. You've never tasted anything so good in your life. But if you want to get handle your indigestion, it's tangerine, which is also why I decided that I had to make a formula, which was an herbal compound, that featured tangerine fiber and orange fiber, and it's for resetting the intestinal tract and colon. So
wow.
There you have it. But, I mean, the point is, use the whole food.
Right.
Don't use the Mylanta, the Zantac, the blah, the blue, the blue, the blue. You don't need that stuff. It's doing the opposite. It's suppressing the symptom rather than solving it.
Well, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Something that I have found that works for me,
mm-hmm.
if I have an upset stomach, is drinking or eating some kind of mint, even if it's the mint leaves or drinking mint tea.
Sure.
What is it about mint that helps in so many ways?
Well, it's calming and soothing to the digestive tract. So that's been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. In fact, King Tut was buried with mint.
Mm-hmm.
He was buried with numerous herbs so he could move into the afterlife without tummy aches. No kidding, really was. So cinnamon bark, there's so many different herbs, but especially mint, spearmint, peppermint, any kind of mint will soothe the digestive tract. In fact, when we go to mint, we can then start thinking peppers.
Right.
Now, it's a slight step to a pepper, but most people have no idea that cayenne pepper is actually a remedy to heal ulcers.
You would think that would be quite the opposite.
They would think it, but it's actually workable. Not even workable, it works. It's written about in herbal texts for thousands of years. There it is. In fact, you know, something I brought up earlier about cleansing the liver or healing the liver, we should go back to.
Right.
And, Jen, this is huge. There are going to be people who will be pulling over their car hearing what I had to say. In fact, everyone needs to get a pen and paper and write what I'm about to say down. This is earth-shaking, and I can't do enough to get what I'm about to say out. So here it is. So we all know that we have to improve liver function, aid liver function. We've got to do that. There's an herb that we've all heard of, and we use, and we know it's an amazing herb because it does this. What does it do? It protects the liver. I nearly forgot. It's a liver protector. That's what this herb does. What is this mysterious herb? It's called milk thistle. Milk thistle mm-hmm. is considered the best herb on the planet for handling or helping the liver. Now that you've written down milk thistle, underline it and write, I will never use this herb under any condition, ever, for any reason. I will never use it, never use it, never use it. Why would I say something as seemingly blasphemous as that? Here's why. Your liver's job is to protect you. It has to meet and greet everything that comes into the system, good or bad. Hello, who are you? Chocolate, right. Get out of here. Food, okay, I'll take you. So it's a HEPA filter. It's a sponge. It has to meet and greet everything that comes in. It protects you. It's your Army, Navy, Special Forces, Marines, Air Force, and Boy Scouts.
It really is.
Yeah, it really is. Of the body. It has to be functioning 24 hours a day. It's meant to take a beating. It's the only organ you have. We can cut out up to 25% of it, and it'll grow back. The bottom line here, again, is that it's meant to be in a fight. That's what it does. So what does milk thistle do that's so harmful? It's very simple. By protecting the liver, it takes it offline. It takes it offline and doesn't leave it operational. It'd be like me telling you, Jen, I'm going to protect your legs. I really want to keep your legs healthy so that you can run that marathon next year. So I'm going to carry around on my shoulders for the next 2 months. I then put you down after 2 months, and what happens? Your legs have atrophied.
Right.
You fall down. You have no strength. And when people go on sometimes a 2-year milk thistle cleanse or milk thistle cathartic healing, their liver is actually in worse shape than when they started. Now, somebody might say, whoa, 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 now come on now. I know if you have hepatitis, you should use milk thistle because it's going to protect your liver from swelling. Well, yeah, maybe that is true. But why would you help your liver in one area and then kill your body with umpteen thousand, 100,000 chemicals or whatever it is that are coming into your body on a daily basis, poisoning you? The bottom line is a healthy liver will heal itself. What we want to do when we have a swollen liver is not isolate it and send it to the infirmary. We want to get it to work. We want to give it water. We want to get it the right herbs, the dandelion, the bupleurum, the gentian, not ginseng, gentian, G-E-N-T-I-A-N. You can write that down, G-E-N-T-I-A-N. You want to give it these kind of herbs that help reset it. We don't want it isolated. We don't need no stinking isolated liver. That'll do us no good. We want it working, and that's how we stay healthy. There are those doctors, and I've met them, who put people on milk thistle cleanses for 2 and 3 years. Oh, doc, what happens when you put people on milk thistle cleanses? Well, they go through cleansing reactions. Oh, they do? Like what? Oh, they have headaches. They can't sleep at night. By the way, these are all the symptoms of a toxic liver. They can't sleep at night. They have headaches. They, insomnia. Oh, yeah, it's headaches, insomnia. Huh? Blurry vision. Irritated, upset eyes. Really? Right. Irritated and upset. Oh, red. Yeah, huh? I mentioned headaches already. Their right shoulder will be stiff, sore, and tight. They'll get congested in their nose, sinuses, and chest. Their skin will be itchy. Oh, they'll be itching all the time. Really? And this is good? Oh, yeah. It's great. And how do they feel when they stop? Oh, they feel great. Why? I guess so. You have a vice on someone's head for 2 years, and you finally take it off, and taking it off would feel good.
Yeah, no kidding. Now I want to ask you
sure
about, because you mentioned this in the book, and I was looking through, I read your book, it's awesome. Mm. But one thing that really caught my eye, because I hear this from a lot of white spiritual workers right now.
Sure.
The body clock.
Oh, my gosh.
So screwed up.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it is. It's scary what we don't know about the body. In fact, I'm going to go through it with you,
okay.
But I'm going to hit some really amazing points that are completely understood, are understood, misunderstood. We don't realize that we need to go to bed with a stomach that's emptying from hours before when we stopped eating. In other words, this is going to be, again, blasphemous with what I'm about to say. We need to eat our basic meals in the morning, and then around noon is about the biggest meal of the day. You could have it earlier than that. And then after that, it's juices, it's fruit, it's snacks. And by the time we go to bed, if we're having anything, it's juice or juicy fruit. Now, why is this important? Because the body only has so much time to digest this. And I made that sound so simple, but it's true. Whatever isn't digested today is going to add to your weight tomorrow. So in your sleep, in my new edition of my book coming out in 2009, I'll have these additions. So here's the new cycle of what is repairing at night. From 11 p.m. to 1 p.m., and now there are other organs being repaired at the same time, but from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. is the ascending colon. From 1 to 3 a.m. is the transverse colon. From 3 to 5 a.m. is the descending colon. From 5 to 7 a.m. is the intestines. From 7 to 9 a.m. is the stomach. Why is this important? Your entire digestive tract is going through its repair process while you sleep. So therefore, if you have any food moving through this area, and I mean a meal that just came in around 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, maybe you're one of those midnight people, and you said, well, you know, Taco Bell says eat at midnight, so you had your fourth meal. If you have food in your digestive tract, it can't repair. If you were going to take a shower, think about this, Jen. I just love this analogy. I just came up with it. If you have a time set aside every day to take a shower,
right?
But you can't because people keep coming in the door and you keep having to help them. You get dirtier and dirtier and your hair gets stringier and you start smelling and your teeth get rotten. Same thing with your digestive tract. And you see it. People get bulbous. They get bigger. They get bigger. They can't go anymore. Their eliminations are once every two or three days. They get poor skin. Their hair is getting brittle. So, going to the big question, now what portion of the body clock would you like me to talk about? Because I just talked about a little portion, but I can go through the whole thing if you like.
What is a good way of, is it just watching what you eat to help getting the body clock back on track?
Well,
or is there something that we as individuals can do to,
sure.
I mean, I have a woman who, she's up all night and doesn't get to sleep till like 4, 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Now, is that on by choice that she's up, or she just can't sleep?
She can't sleep.
She has liver issues. In fact, if you're awake between the hours of 11 until 1, that's when your gallbladder is going through its repair cycle. From 1 until 3 is when your liver is going through its repair cycle. So if you're awake between those hours or any variation thereof, then your liver and gallbladder are in deep doo-doo. And, of course, if your digestive tract is involved, well, your liver is directly tied to your digestive tract. Your liver regulates your digestive tract. So if you have trouble, and by the way, all of this is written in my book.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, Diagnostic Face Reading and the Holistic You. I haven't mentioned one thing that's not in there. Okay, yeah, I did. I lied. So the new repair cycles of the colon, that's not in there, but it's very close. But everything else is. So if we support or understand what the body's doing at certain times of the day, we'll know what to do, what to eat. For example, if we couldn't quite modify the eating at midday and making that our biggest meal of the day and then literally fasting through the rest of the day, and by the way, that's what break fast is all about, breaking the fast. It's right there in the word.
Right.
We should be fasting from around 2 o'clock on, and I'm not kidding. In fact, I'm 48 years old, and you've seen my pictures. In fact, I'm going to go to MySpace. Roger Bazanis, look up my pictures. I'm amazing. 48 years old. You'll see before and after pictures of me. 48 years old, nary a gray hair. Every now and then I just can't comb out my tongue in the morning. So not a gray hair, and I don't color my hair. I'm 16% body fat. I'm 159 to 60 pounds, which is a little tiny bit more than what I was when I was on the football team in high school. I was, I think, 155 in high school. So, and it's all due to the way I feed my body and what I feed it, but it's primarily due to the times I feed it. I'm getting people to lose 2.5 pounds a day by changing the times they put in food. You should hear the stories that I'm getting thank yous on. In fact, if you want to read some of them, go to my MySpace page, that name we wrote down earlier, and if I should spell my last name again, I will. Go to my MySpace page and read the comments and just go through and read what people are saying about how they're losing weight and doing this. And this is only a page I threw up there and got serious about back in August. And in that time, the page has gone nuts. So if we follow the clock and know when to support ourselves, then we'll heal that much faster. If we just pay attention to what this thing is doing.
It's a really amazing how much, I mean, if you really listen to your body, it really will tell you when to eat.
It really will. And in fact, listen to me. I mean, just listen to me. Here I am, 48 years old, and I don't know how old I sound, but I've been told I sound like I'm in my 20s or something.
Yeah, you really do sound very youthful.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. In fact, on my 40th birthday, was it? Yeah, it was my 40th birthday. I decided to take up softball again. This is after I'd pared my weight down and became the svelte little thing again. And I couldn't believe it. I'd been carrying around 225 pounds on a 5'8 frame. And it looked good on me. People said, oh, you were so cute. Yeah, I didn't think so. So, but when I took it all off, I was bouncing around the softball field like I was back in high school again. I couldn't believe how fast I was. In fact, okay, I have to tell you a story. Not that I haven't been already, but so about 5 years ago, my girlfriend at the time says, you're getting gray on your temples. I, what? You're getting gray on your temples. It's so cute. Oh, no, I don't want to look cute. I want to look sexy and virile. I don't want to look cute. Oh, no. So I didn't want gray hair. Didn't want it. But I recognize that the kidneys regulate the bladder and reproductive system, which regulate the scalp. So what did I do? I grabbed a formula that I make, and I was downing it around the clock, this formula for kidney. I'm downing this formula around the clock eight times a day. And I'm not kidding, eight times a day. And I was saying, if there's a way to fix this, I'm going to fix this. And to make a long story short, to give you the slightly shorter version, 4 weeks later, I was looking in a mirror at a convention, because I go to a lot of conventions, and my hair was back to normal. And I'm bouncing around the convention showing everybody that my hair is back to normal, because they all knew me. They knew it was had grayed. And so what was this all about, Jen? Here's what it is. The body has a number of switches. Those switches can be on, off, or partially on. That's the only variations, on, off, or partially on. Now, we've all heard of people going gray overnight. You've heard of that. Some people have actually seen it. Some people have gone gray in a week or two. We've seen that, too. Well, what that means is that the switch that controlled hair color is now starting to turn off. And if it can turn off, that means something turned it off. It's something I'm doing to myself. I'm poisoning myself in some way. So I said, no, I won't do that. So I cleaned up my diet, the dietary errors I was making, and I got to admit, I didn't notice what they were, but I did down a lot of my product, and I could have done it with grapes for all you grape eaters, so try grapes first if you like, and in a month, my hair was back to normal. And if you look hard, you might find a strand or two of gray hair mixed in there somewhere, but it's not on my temples, and I'm so proud of it. I've now taken almost, because there's a woman I'm working with right now who's starting to see some change. So she's almost the 17th victim of changing hair back to regular color. And it'll be fun because she has this little stripe of gray that just started 3 weeks ago. So I have her doing various supplements to reset her kidneys or to turn them back on. So everyone in the audience is saying, who has gray hair, is saying, you mean I've had gray hair for the past 5 years and I can get rid of it? I don't know. I haven't seen that happen. I know if we get to it early enough, we can get to it and solve it. I know the longer a switch or organ has been turned off, the more it atrophies. Is it going to be off forever? I don't know. I've only discovered this 5 years ago. So I haven't seen anybody with gray hair who only had it for 5 years who's now switched back. I don't know anybody who's done this around the clock for 5 years. Or if they would do it for 5 years, but I know if I get to them early, I could certainly make the change. Isn't that neat?
That's awesome. And believe it or not, the time is up.
I know.
It goes so fast. So once again, why don't you tell us how to get in touch with you and the name of your book and where to get this wonderful book.
Okay. So you can go to my website. And on my website, we need to update it, so don't be alarmed when it doesn't say that it's 336 pages, because the book is 336 pages. So the website address is P like pure, B like body, I like institute, V like victory or ventura.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's PBIV.com. You can get it there. It's $29.95. And I'll tell you what, anybody who calls in from the show to get the book, if you order from my website, what I'll do is this. You put somewhere on your order form that you're from Jen, that you heard me on Jen's show. And if you're ordering two copies, I'll give you a third one free. So buy two, get one free. So that would be a gift that you can give away. Or just put it on your shelf and show everybody that you're so intelligent. And then if you want to find me on MySpace, then my name is Roger, R-O-G-E-R, last name B like boy, E like egg, Z like zebra, A like apple, N like Nancy, I like iris, S like Sam, B-E-Z-A-N-I-S. Roger Bezanis, go there, friend me, look at my page, get on with me, read my blogs, ask me questions, pick my brain. I'm constantly on, and I'll talk to anybody and help anyone who's asking.
And Roger, you're a tremendous force in this world, and I look forward to having you on again very soon. So next time I'm volunteering to actually get my face red, and then you guys can see. But first I got to drink a lot of grape juice and a few other things.
Oh, Jen, I won't hurt you.
I know you won't. But until then, this is Jennifer Hellman thanking you again for listening to AIR. And with that, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights and inspiration. Many blessings and good night.